another edition of the Byron New York Show, the No Chit Chat podcast, brought to you today by ExpressVPN. We'll talk more about that in a little bit. But first, I want to talk about two serious issues here in Washington. The first is the question of the National Guard. Why is the National Guard still in Washington? You may remember, there were roughly 25,000 National Guard members in Washington for the inauguration of President Biden. Now, it's been a normal practice over the years to have some National Guard in town for inaugurations. They were certainly there for the Obama inaugurations. But 25,000 was a lot. It was way too many. And this deployment was in large part, in my opinion, an overreaction to the Capitol riot of January 6th. But anyway, they stayed through the inauguration, and now 5,000 National Guard troops are still here in Washington. The inauguration was 2 weeks ago, and it went off without incident. And there is currently no need for troops in Washington. Yet, you go downtown Washington to the federal areas, you will find tall fencing and razor wire around a huge militarized zone around the Capitol. And the National Guard are inside the perimeter, guarding it from inside the fence. Now, you might think that there's a fence just around the narrow perimeter, just around the Capitol. No, that's not the way it is. It extends for blocks in every direction from the Capitol. This large militarized zone with a fence, with razor wire. It is not just around the Capitol. It is a very large part of Washington, D.C. So now, the head of the Capitol Police wants to make the fencing permanent. And the National Guard is still here. So, I mean, you go down there, and there's fewer National Guard than there were. There are 5,000. So 20,000 have left. But there are 5,000 still here. The fencing is still here. It looks kind of like it did before the inauguration. And the Capitol Police want to make the fencing permanent. National Guard is staying at least until mid-March, apparently because authorities fear another January 6th-style riot from Trump supporters. I'm going to read you a quote from the Secretary of the Army, John Whitley, who said this last week. He'd been briefed by the FBI, which hadn't apparently told him of any specific threats, but said there were threats. So he says, quote, "There are several upcoming events. We don't know what they are over the next several weeks, and they're concerned that there could be situations where there are lawful protests, First Amendment protected protests, that could either be used by malicious actors or other problems that could emerge." So therefore, the National Guard stays. Now, on the proposal to make the fence permanent, because it's kind of two parts of the same thing. You have this enormous fence creating a militarized zone with the National Guard inside. Now, the proposal to make the fence permanent has met with bipartisan opposition. I mean, Republicans and Democrats both do not like this. Plus, the District of Columbia government is opposed to it. And so it's one of these things that everybody's opposed to it, and there it is. We'll see what happens there. But as far as the troops are concerned, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, clearly the most powerful person on Capitol Hill, has not called for sending the National Guard home. Instead, she's made these vague and really ominous-sounding statements like, "The enemy is within." That's a quote from Pelosi. "The enemy is within." So that's apparently her way of making the security issue a partisan issue and accusing Capitol Hill Republicans of being the true enemy. So they are the enemy. They are within. Therefore, we need all these troops. So there are reports that the troops are staying until mid-March because the people in charge, are we talking Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, Charles Schumer, the Senate Majority Leader, others, they want the troops to be at the ready during the Trump impeachment trial, which is set to begin next week in the Senate. And there are other reports that they might want the troops to stay until March 4th in the belief that there might be a big protest in Washington on March 4th. The reason it would be March 4th, apparently, is that March 4th was the original constitutional day for the presidential inauguration. The day the Constitution specified that a new president would be inaugurated was March 4th. That was changed during the Depression to January 20th. So we don't know, but in any event, the troops are here. And as far as the Biden White House is concerned, they're just staying out of it, at least publicly. There was a question for Jen Psaki at the briefing the other day, and she just didn't answer it. She said, well, you'll have to talk to the Defense Department. Well, there are some voices, however, who are saying that enough is enough. Tom Cotton, the Republican senator, veteran of the U.S. Army in Iraq and Afghanistan, is calling for the troops to come home. He writes a FoxNews.com op-ed. And he says that, you know, the Guard deserves gratitude. They deployed on very short notice under very difficult conditions after the violence at the Capitol began on January 6th. And then they stayed for 2 weeks until the inauguration. Now they're still here. By the way, it's very cold and snowing in Washington, and they're outside guarding. But weather aside, it's time for them to go. So here's what Cotton wrote. I'm going to quote it here. Quote, "The lesson of the Capitol riot is not that we should quarter a standing army at the Capitol just in case, but rather that our security measures should be calibrated to the actual threats." Now, Cotton said, as far as those threats are concerned, he noted that he's a member of the Senate Intelligence Committee, which is briefed on such things, and he is not aware of any threat that would justify the continued presence of the National Guard. So I, after this op-ed, I texted Cotton with a few additional questions, and he gave me his prescription for what he would do now. I'm going to quote on the text here. Store fencing, send home troops, Capitol Police can get reinforcements from local law enforcement and local National Guard much faster with coordination. In other words, what the Capitol needs is better policing and not a standing army and not a permanent fence to deal with whatever threat may or may not be out there. Because clearly, the authorities were not prepared to deal with what happened on January 6th. Now, you might say, well, it was unthinkable. And certainly, as we watch the images of the crowds, you know, breaching the Capitol and ransacking the Capitol, it did seem unthinkable at that point. But clearly they knew something was up, and they could have had more forces ready. They could have had a pre-existing agreement to quickly get the National Guard involved in if that was necessary. And they had not done that. In part, by the way, because they were spooked by what had happened with the use of the Guard and troops in Lafayette Square when the Black Lives Matter riots were taking place there, and then President Trump cleared the square for his walk over to the church. So they had become very, very shy about using any troops in Washington. But anyway, the fact is, they could have been much, much better prepared, and they could certainly now, with the lessons of January 6th, be much better prepared. So the question right now is whether the leadership on Capitol Hill will listen to them. I mean, will the fence really come down? You know, or will it continue to stand on a, quote, temporary basis? It is not unthinkable that everybody could say the fence is temporary. Oh, it's only a temporary measure. This is not a permanent measure. And it could stay there for a long, long time, maybe for years, as a temporary fence. So, will the fence come down? Will it be a permanent, temporary fence? And will the troops go home? Or will their temporary deployment last beyond March? These are the questions that Speaker Pelosi and other top lawmakers on Capitol Hill need to answer, because fundamentally, what happens on Capitol Hill is the purview of Congress. Pelosi and Schumer are the two leaders of Congress right now. Certainly, McCarthy and McConnell, the two minority leaders, should be involved as well. But something needs to be done. And by something, I mean they need to take down the fence. They need to send home the troops. They need to be better prepared if there is trouble again. So anyway, that's my sense of what's going on right now with the presence of National Guard troops in Washington. And as far as the Senate and the COVID relief and the Joe Biden thing is concerned, we're going to talk about that in just a minute after we talk a little bit about ExpressVPN. Social media and big tech are infringing on freedom of expression in this country, and they're not going to stop. So the question is, what are you going to do in response? You could deactivate all of your social media accounts. That doesn't seem to be very productive, but here's an idea. Instead of letting big tech sites revoke your right to free speech, why not revoke their right to your data? That's why you should protect your online data by using ExpressVPN. Now, if you've ever wondered how free social media companies make all their money, well, they do it by tracking your searches, your video history, everything you click on, and then they sell that data. When you use ExpressVPN, you anonymize much of your online presence by hiding your IP address, and that makes your activity more difficult to trace and to sell to advertisers. Now, ExpressVPN also encrypts 100% of your data to protect you from eavesdroppers on your network. And the ExpressVPN app could not be easier to set up. You just tap one button on your phone, on your computer, and you are protected. So, go to expressvpn.com/Byron. By visiting my link, you'll get an extra 3 months of ExpressVPN service for free. Again, that's expressvpn.com/Byron. expressvpn.com/Byron to protect your data today. Okay, we're back, and what I want to talk about now is the weakness of President Biden as far as the Senate is concerned, and it is striking weakness. Now, Biden, as you know, wants to pass a massive $1.9 trillion COVID relief bill, and his fellow Democrats want it to be more than a COVID relief bill. They want it to be a far-reaching government spending bill, including things like an increase in the federal minimum wage. Now, this has been a Democratic priority for years and years, long before the virus ever appeared. But they're throwing it in the COVID relief bill and want it to be part of this giant $1.9 trillion measure. But now, Biden and his party are feeling the effects of the very delicate balance that exists between Democrats and Republicans in the U.S. Senate. So the question here is, when is control of the Senate not really control of the Senate? And the answer is when each party has 50 votes. And that's what exists right now. So yes, Kamala Harris, the vice president, can break ties. And that's why Senator Schumer is the majority leader. But if an issue divides the party, the Senate, along party lines, and if Republicans are unanimously opposed to something, Harris cannot use her tie-breaking power unless Democrats have all 50 of their senators on board. If they lose even one Democratic senator, they lose. So when it comes to controversial legislation, one that can break along party lines, the president has really only two options. Now, one, he can convince some Republicans to join Democrats and create a majority. Or two, if Republicans are opposed, he can keep all 50 of his Democratic senators in line and win with Vice President Harris's vote. It really has to be one thing or the other. So, on this COVID relief issue, Biden has talked a lot about bipartisanship, but has not really done much to win Republican votes until on Monday he met with a group of 10 Republican senators who had a counter proposal on relief. I mean, that was their initiative. It wasn't Biden's initiative. It was their initiative. At the moment, we'll see what comes from that meeting, but at the moment it appears the president is more interested in pressuring Democrats to go along with his plan than he is in persuading Republicans to go along with his plan. Now, he's had kind of a subtle pressure campaign on Democrats that kind of backfired the other day. Harris, the vice president, decided to give interviews to TV stations in West Virginia and Arizona. So you think, well, why? Why would she give interviews to TV stations in West Virginia and Arizona? Why? How'd she pick those two states? Well, it's because there were two centrist Democratic senators, Joe Manchin in West Virginia and Kyrsten Sinema in Arizona. And she wanted them to get on board and to know they should get on board for the Democratic COVID relief proposal. So, it backfires when Joe Manchin, the senator from West Virginia, is blindsided by the whole thing. He's surprised. He didn't know this. He didn't know Harris was going to do it. And he said afterwards, quote, I'm going to quote him here, "I saw it. I couldn't believe it. No one called me. We're going to try to find a bipartisan pathway forward, but we need to work together. This is not a way of working together." So you can kind of color Joe Manchin unhappy with this White House tactic. But of course, because it's a 50-50 Senate, they have to have Joe Manchin. Joe Manchin becomes the most important senator in the world. If there are 50 Republicans opposed to something and 49 Democrats in favor of it, and then Joe Manchin. I mean, he means everything at that point. Now, the 10 Republicans, the ones who met with Biden in the White House, they are Senators Rob Portman, Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, Bill Cassidy, Mitt Romney, Sherry Moore Capito, Todd Young, Jerry Moran, Mike Rounds, and Tom Tillis. Well, they have this plan, and it's far smaller. Now, they're what you would call, a lot of them are what you would call kind of a moderate caucus inside the Senate, larger Republican Senate conference. Their plan is a lot smaller than the Democrats' plan. The Democrats' plan, remember, is $1.9 trillion, and theirs is about $600 billion. So, in other words, it's about one-third the size of the Democratic plan. It does not include the minimum wage proposal. Does not. It would send smaller checks to individual Americans. You remember Biden wants to send $1,400, and they would send $1,000. There's a big difference in how much money it would send to state and local governments. But the biggest issue here, one of the biggest issues here, is that these Republicans have taken note of the fact that Congress passed a huge relief measure in December. Just December, not very long ago. It was $900 billion. And much of that money has not been spent. As a matter of fact, there was another huge relief measure passed in March of 2020, nearly a year ago, and some of that has not been spent yet. So their position is, well, maybe Congress should not be piling on new billions of dollars, and maybe trillions, in spending until the previously approved billions and trillions have been spent. So I'm going to quote to you from a letter they wrote the president. Quote, "We note that billions of dollars remain unspent from the previous COVID relief packages. The proposal we have outlined is mindful of these past efforts while also acknowledging the priorities that need additional support right now. So in other words, yeah, we do need to spend some money on things right now, but there's a huge amount of money that hasn't even been spent yet that we've already passed. So we need to go through that too. Okay, so this gives Biden a choice. And listen, I think there's no doubt that the Republicans are making this proposal in good faith. I mean, some of them are certainly open to compromise. And Biden could either, one, work with a compromise them, or two, try to whip all 50 Democrats in line behind him and pass a bill with Vice President Harris's tie-breaking vote. Now, you're already seeing, especially after this meeting, a lot of progressive voices saying to Biden, don't do it, don't do it, don't deal with the Republicans, they're dealing in bad faith, don't do it, get your team together and pass this bill. Who knows what's going to happen, but COVID is by far the most important issue of Biden's presidency. It is the reason he was elected. He wants to move on all sorts of issues that are important to Democrats. But COVID is at the top of the list, and if he messes it up, he's in a bad way. So I'm going to finish by quoting a man named Rui Teixeira, who's a big progressive voice. He's with the Center for American Progress. And this is what he wrote. For the next period of time, nothing else is more important. Not immigration reform, not criminal justice reform, not climate change, not child poverty, not executive orders, not Trump's trial. Either solve the twin crises, and by that he meant COVID and the related economic downturn. Either solve the twin crises or prepare yourself, President Biden, for the wrath of voters who will, not unreasonably, think you have failed them. So here we are. This bill, another big spending bill on Capitol Hill, we hear about them all the time. This bill is particularly important for Joe Biden because it is the reason he was elected. He has supporters like Rui Teixeira telling him that if he messes this up, the voters will believe that he has failed them and he will have failed in his presidency. And it's not about immigration, it's not about criminal justice reform, not about climate change, not about all that other stuff. It's about getting coronavirus and coronavirus relief right. So the next few days will be very important in this. Biden has a decision to make, but it's a decision being made from a certain part of weakness. 50 votes in the Senate will not allow him to just work his will with Congress. He's going to have to either get every single one of his people, Joe Manchin included, together, or he's going to have to compromise with Republicans. And we'll see what he does. So I want to thank you for listening and hope you'll join us again soon for another edition of the Byron York Show.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
In an attempt to divide America and Israel, leftists have spread hateful falsehoods about Israel and its right to self-defense. You deserve the truth. Hey, y'all, it's Sarah from The Sarah Carter Show. Israel has missiles flying over its head, yet the radical left is calling them racist, evil, and every other smear imaginable. It's disgusting. And on this week's Sarah Carter Show, we expose them for what they are, anti-Semitic lies about our Jewish brothers and sisters. Subscribe to The Sarah Carter Show on your favorite podcast app.